flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Patriots Friday on WEEI is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market and by FindMassMoney.gov.
This is Jones and Keefe
on WEEI and streaming everywhere on the Odyssey app.
Alex is a good player, man. He's a complete player. He's a player that he's been in winning teams, right, his whole career. Good defender. Offensively, he's really good, you know, and he's a guy that a lot of people are talking about, right? And I do believe he can impact a big league team, a championship caliber team. You know, he's that type of player.
KJ and Lyons in for Jones and Keefe on WEEI. Happy holidays, and thank you so much for spending your time with us as you're moving about, trying to stay warm. You know, John, I'm trying to figure out, look, Crochet, nice. Walker Buehler, nice. Those are nice pieces. Where's the exploding piece that the Red Sox are going to go after to make noise, to say this is the top line story? This is the star that they got. This is the star that used to be here. It used to be over there, but is now here. Is it Bregman?
I think Crochet can fit into that category. I think he's going to be an ace for them. But to your point, he's still a young player who hasn't thrown over 150 innings in a season. I think there's really only two options to find a guy like you're saying. It's Corbin Burnes, which I feel like once they sign Walker Buehler, for better or worse, that puts Corbin Burnes kind of out of the picture. The other's Alex Bregman. And that's why I find today's deal by the Tigers to sign Gleyber Torres, 1 year, $15 million, and their president of baseball ops said Torres is going to play second base for them, pretty significant, because this was a team that was aggressive in their pursuit of Alex Bregman. It looks like Houston's not going to bring him back. Now Detroit's out of it. That opens the door for Alex Bregman to come to the Red Sox to play second base. And I think he's the type of guy, look, he's not an, you know, he's not a gold glove, top tier, top 10 MLB player, but he's a really good player. And I think he fits exactly what the Red Sox need. He played shortstop in college, so he has experience playing in the middle infield. He's won multiple World Series. He hit .294 in the playoffs in 2022 when they won their second World Series. And he's a veteran. Like, just like you and I talked about last week and earlier this week with Walker Buehler, that pitching staff needed a veteran because it was a bunch of guys in their early to mid-20s who hadn't pitched in the playoffs. Buehler's won two World Series, including obviously getting the final out at Yankee Stadium this past October. It's kind of the same thing if you look at their lineup. Like Devers, he's won a World Series, been to an ALCS, but look at a lot of these guys that are in the lineup for the Red Sox. either no playoff experience or minimal playoff experience. I think Bregman brings that element while also being a really good player that I think would make a really big difference for them.
But possibly at $27 million a year to play second?
I'm okay with that. Is it more money? Because I think the highest second baseman right now is like 25 or something. So he would be the highest paid second baseman.
And the need is so big that you kind of have to overpay.
And they haven't gotten second base right since Pedroia retired, I feel like. Even the 18 team. Remember they had Ian Kinsler for half the year, and he didn't suck. But like they haven't really gotten second base right, I feel like, since Pedroia retired.
Does it feel like, and this is just me, that it seems like the team is having a problem moving Yoshida? And if you have a problem moving Yoshida, it kind of keeps your arm short in terms of what the flexibility that you can do. Like, is Yoshida now suddenly that albatross $19, $20 million contract that you got to hold on to that nobody wants to take? Because if you could free up that deal, if there was somebody who would take Yoshida, I feel like the Red Sox would be a little more bold knowing that, okay, there's one less person that they've got to pay $20 a year out there, and they could be aggressive on another player. Does it feel like that might be holding them up?
So first, to be clear, and I know you and I probably agree on this, it should not be because you're the Boston freaking Red Sox. But in reality and how they operate, it does kind of feel that way. And I don't know if you saw the reports this morning, KJ, that when the Red Sox discussed Luis Castillo with the Mariners, one of the things they wanted to do was package Tristan Casas with Yoshida, because Casas was the piece the Mariners really wanted, but they could also get rid of Yoshida's contract, which... Look, I love Luis Castillo. I wish he was on the Red Sox. I wouldn't make that deal. I think that really undervalues how good Casas can be. And also with Yoshida, I mean, he was really weird last year. Like 2 years ago, I thought, what did he hit, 283 2 years ago?
I thought he said another ground ball to second.
Okay. Yeah, last year, not the same. I mean, he had that big home run, what was it, July 1st or 2nd in Yankee Stadium. And it felt like other than that, gave them nothing for most of the year. But I don't know, do you really want to give up on him? In his third year, like he could bounce back in his third year, and that shouldn't preclude you, from signing Bregman anyway.
Would I? Well, here's why it could have, right? Because if you do the deal for Casas to Seattle and Castillo comes back, you then move Devers to first, and then there's no question that Bregman is here.
He's your third baseman. Yeah.
Right, and he's your third baseman, and then you still say, okay. We did give up Chris Sale for Vaughn Grissom. We still need to see where that is. But you still have guys like David Hamilton who can fill in those spots. But you don't have to overspend for that position. People who are like, you know, like you just moved Devers to DH. There's no way. Like if we're talking about a Red Sox team that is kind of like tiptoeing.
But they're underspending it pretty much every other position. Right. I mean, their outfield's really cheap. Right, they're right now cheap in the even Trevor
Story.
That's
fine because they're performing.
And Trevor Story is expensive, but he's not a top two highest paid shortstop in the league. They're cheap at catcher. Their pitching staff is still really cheap. Like, I don't understand why you can't say, oh, we'll sign Bregman to play second base and pay him extra money there when you're cheap at most other positions on top of it.
See, this is where I'm thinking where the team is thinking, right? Like, what are they paying for the position? I mean, go back to the early days of the negotiation for Rafael Devers, and they started using Matt Olson as a comp.
Yep.
And I was like, well, wait a minute.
He ended up getting, double what Olson got?
Yeah. Well, the other part of it is Matt Olson's a first baseman. So I was like, wow, are the Red Sox looking at Rafael Devers probably being a first baseman longer in this contract than he will be a third baseman, right? Because I could potentially see, let's say you were able to do the deal for Casas. You now have first base open. Rafael Devers goes to first base probably for the next 3 to 4 years, probably for the next 3 to 4 years. Then you go to DH area where, like, okay, $30 million for a DH 5 years from now is probably the going rate at that time. And then you put Bregman at third where he's clearly a defensive upgrade. That's where he plays. And until Detroit went and got, Gleyber Torres?
Yeah, he got $15 million from the Tigers.
So the Tigers may still be in play for Bregman.
I think trading Casas, first of all, would be a huge mistake. Unless you're getting a top-of-the-line ace, I just think that would be
I don't think you just trade Casas
mistake,
just to make a trade. But I think it has to be someone who's going to be 1-2 in your rotation.
And even trading him to get rid of Yoshida's contract, I think, would just be stupid, stupid thing to do.
Because I think that's why Seattle probably said no. I think they probably said no, according to the reports, is that it wasn't that they didn't want Casas, is they didn't want Yoshida's contract. you see what I'm saying?
And that's why, like, when you think about Bregman and you look at some of these guys, like, we're talking about Casas, 24, no playoff experience. Story's 32, but no significant playoff experience. Willy Abreu was a rookie last year. Duran, who we all look at as the best player on the team, and he's probably a top 10 player in the majors, he's 28, but no real playoff experience. Like, they don't have a guy in this lineup besides Devers that they know is going to perform well in the postseason. And Bregman would be a guy like that. And he would fill a hole at second base. I just think it's, yeah, you might have to pay extra money for him, but it just, to me, it makes too much sense to not do it.
You know, I hear the name Teoscar Hernandez maybe heading to the Dodgers.
I love him too, but I think he's going back to L.A.
Yeah, you think he's going back to L.A.? Actually, yeah, Anthony Santander may be in the mix to go to the Dodgers if Teoscar Hernandez doesn't stay. I think there's kind of maybe a behind-the-scenes tug of war between the Dodgers and the Red Sox for Hernandez. If that's the case, you know, let it be known. But then again, I think the fan base is kind of like, don't tell me who you're in a tug of war for until we have the rope in our hand and you see the other person on the ground no longer holding the rope, because this rope of hope thing kind of gets tiring. Look,
or they're just yelling from the mountaintops, sign one of them.
Yes, I mean, Santander would answer both right side and left side of the bat, and you get another outfielder. Again, really, it comes down to Yoshida, like, because Yoshida cannot play the outfield. Like, what do you do with that? You can't even move it off to a smaller market team. Maybe that's something that happens as you get into the season. Maybe there's a team that's looking for maybe a contact bat. But Yoshida would have to show himself to be that contact bat. So then that's kind of like the double-edged sword.
And I think really what you're looking to do here is, sorry to cut you off, can you replace what you got out of Tyler O'Neill from the right side of the plate? And like Bregman, he had five fewer homers than O'Neill, but his average was 20 points higher. He had more RBIs. He can play a valuable defensive second base. Like, I think that would be an upgrade from what you got out of Tyler O'Neill last year.
Yeah, but you still need someone out there, and you still need another fielder. I mean, do you put Rafaela out there? Are you making room for him out there?
Yeah, but if your outfield is, you know, Jarren Duran, who's probably your best player overall and a great defender, Willy Abreu, who just won a Gold Glove.
Right.
I mean, I can deal with whoever you want to put in left. Like, I think you can make that. Maybe it would be Rafaela if Story's at short. You know, maybe it would be games with Yoshida. I don't know. Maybe it'd be Ref Snyder or whatever. Like, I think you can deal with left field when you have two other great outfielders.
Or, like you say, or if you're the Red Sox, why not go and get another outfielder, at least to directly give what you were getting from Tyler O'Neill? And then in the infield, you needed to add something anyway because you haven't gotten anything from Trevor Story yet, right? So really going to get Bregman is really about, hey, Trevor Story, not only has he been injured, but really hasn't performed. So you really just have a high-paid defensive shortstop in Trevor Story. Like, I don't know what you're not going to get power out of him. I think that window has sailed. The contact, like I said, we just haven't seen enough at-bats. So going to get Bregman, I think that's really where the logjam is. It would be one thing if Story was on a lower deal. Now, granted, like you said, he's not getting the most money in the world, but you're really getting lower end second baseman performance from him for the dollar that he's getting, right? So he is overpaid in a sense. Like, if you put him at second, you're like, okay, that sounds about right. You put him at short, you're like, okay, clearly this is not a top seven guy at that position, but is getting top eight, top nine money. So you're really going to get Bregman because of what,
like,
you
Story
haven't gotten of Story.
Is the 10th highest paid shortstop. If you include Mookie Betts, right, who's probably going to play short, Story's at 10. So it's not like that's not prohibitive,
I mean,
to me.
Right, that's the upper third, but are you getting upper third results from this guy from the plate? Not even close. So really, the talk about Bregman is really about, like, okay, because we haven't gotten anything from Story, something else has to be done in the infield. And I would say, yeah, and something else probably needs to be done in left as well if you want this team to really, really compete at all parts of the plate. Because I think the other part we still have to see is, what does a true, full, uninjured season of Casas look like?
Yeah, and this is a team, like, you look at the AL, it's there for the taking. Like, if you get good pitching out of Crochet, Houck, and Bayo this year, which is certainly possible, they have the stuff, and if you can add a piece to this lineup, you can get to the ALCS.
The Yankees are scary. I think the best thing that happened for them, the best thing that happened to them is that they didn't get Soto, because they got so many other pieces to build around to make a team. I said if the Yankees just had Soto and Judge, I would say at some point one of those two might break down, and the other one, why they have the ability to carry them, the rest of the team does it. Now with Bellinger and with Freed to that staff
Devin
as well.
Williams, yeah.
Right, Devin Williams as your closer. Like, you know, the Red Sox still haven't addressed like who's going to be the closer. Please don't tell me it's Chapman, because that's the case. I'm like, okay, you guys are really running an
option. I mean, I just look at the AL and like the Astros, they're still going to be really good, but I think they're going to have maybe a bit of a down year by their standards. Baltimore is going to lose Corbin Burnes. Like, they're still going to be good, but they lose that ace. They didn't get Crochet. The Yankees are great, but the rest of the AL East besides them and the Orioles is not good. The AL Central, you know, like the Twins, like the Guardians and the Royals, but the Red Sox, if they add a guy like Bregman, considering they already added Crochet, should be able to be better than those teams.
Okay, best case scenario, worst case scenario with this updated Red Sox pitching staff. It looks clearly better than last year, but we'll take a look at that next. 617-779-7937, KJ and Lyons in for Jones and Keefe. Time to trend with Joe Braverman.
The Greg Hill Show, weekdays 6 to 10.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending Now is brought to you by Timeout Market Boston. The final injury report is out for the Patriots as they get ready for their penultimate game of the season tomorrow afternoon against the Chargers at 1 o'clock. Cornerback Marcus Jones is out for the second straight game. He's dealing with a hip injury that forced him not to practice for a second consecutive week. Starting center Ben Brown is questionable with a concussion after not practicing all week. Kyle Duggar, Anthony Jennings, Jabril Peppers, Cole Strange, Jelani Tavai, and Kaden Wallace are also among those that are questionable for LA. Both their starting running backs are on the list. Gus Edwards is out with an ankle injury, and J.K. Dobbins is questionable after being designated to return from injured reserve this week. Also, both tight ends Will Disley and Hayden Hurst are listed as questionable. Staying in the NFL, the Seahawks knocked off the Bears on Thursday Night Football. 6-3 was your final score. This game featured 13 combined punts. Caleb Williams threw the game-ending interception with 20 seconds left to keep Seattle's playoff hopes alive at 9-7, while Chicago moves to 4-12. Celtics will look to bounce back from back-to-back losses tonight for the first of two straight home games with the Indiana Pacers. Drew Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis are questionable for tonight. Holiday missed the last game on Christmas with right shoulder impingement, while Porzingis left that game with a left ankle sprain. Tip-off from TD Garden set for 7:30. The Bruins return to the ice for the first of a home-and-home on a back-to-back with the Blue Jackets. David Pastrnak was seen at morning skate today. He left Monday's win over the Capitals with what was called an upper body injury. Puck drop from Columbus is at 7 o'clock. And bowl season in college football continues tomorrow with Boston College taking on Nebraska in the Bad Boy Mowers Pinstripe Bowl from Yankee Stadium. Kickoff is at noon. You can listen to that game right here on 93.7 WEEI FM with coverage beginning at 11:30. And in the Wasabi Fenway Bowl from Fenway Park, it'll be UConn and North Carolina. That is also tomorrow at 11:30. Experience the essence of Boston's culinary and cultural scene at Time Out Market Boston, nestled in the Fenway. From live music sessions to food and beverage tastings and everything in between, Time Out Market Boston showcases the best of the city under one roof. I'm Joe Braverman, and that's what's trending on WBEI and WBEI.com.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ah, only the finest Carson Malt lyrics.
Let it go.
Red Sox, what are we doing? Are we doing what we've done before? Relievers as starters all over again? Oh, God.
Pack it up, pack it in. Pray for any wins. Sox, they started pitching Ricky Vaughn from the pen. Major league starters show the Sox need to catch up. Now all the fans are starting to act up.
Get up, stand up. It's the whistle call up. Don't know who's dealing. That's a bad feeling.
My head's hanging down. My head's hanging down. So tell me Red Sox is on the mound. Who's on the mound?
Didn't he just relieve last night?
Who's on the mound? Who's on the mound?
Triple A, call up to sit down. Who's on the mound?
You know, if you pay for starting pitching,
who's on the mound?
Someone eats up these innings.
Who's on the mound?
What is the guy's name again?
Triple A, call up and sit down.
Look, I know you want Montgomery. I know there's a desire to have Snell.
But it's bullpen day again, folks.
I serve your ass like Raphael Nadal. Relievers as starters ain't cutting it, pal. Word to your moms, while Soto drops bombs. Sox paying for pitches like saying KJ's on. What's full throttle and when's it return? They always pitch and bring a shotgun. Shoot! My head's hanging down. My head's hanging down. So tell me Red Sox is on the mound. Who's on the mound?
KJ Elias. WEEI in for Jones and Keith. That's a parody from March of last year. The Red Sox have clearly done something about the pitching that was literally, it was just rotating bullpen day. And some of those young guys got their first taste of getting over 140 innings and going further than they ever gone before. And now with the acquisition of Crochet and Buehler, also throw in as well as Sandoval, who will be there later towards the end of the, you know, as the season goes on. You now have what looks to be like a legitimate staff to compete that the Red Sox haven't had probably in the last few years, John.
It's definitely the best I've felt about their pitching staff going into a year, probably since, I don't know, maybe 2021-ish. And because, look, Garrett Crochet, only 146 innings last year, but led the MLB in strikeout rate, six games of 10-plus strikeouts, which was tied for first. This is a guy that has the stuff to be an elite pitcher, and I think over a full season can be. And then you have Hauk and Bayo, who part of the year last year, like first 2 months of the year, Hauk looked like a Cy Young candidate, and Bayo had a couple good stretches as well. You would think, KJ, one of them at least will give us a full season. You know, they probably both, and if they both do, great. But at least one of them should give us a full season to go along with Crochet at the front of it.
So here's what my starting rotation looks like right now. Probably Crochet, Buehler, Bayo, Hauk. Then it gets interesting. Is it Whitlock? Is it Giolito? Is it Crawford in that next spot?
I'd rather Whitlock in the bullpen, personally. I think he's a real weapon to come out in those situations, long relief, short relief. Like a couple of years ago when he was primarily a bullpen guy, that was extremely valuable to them.
So Giolito has a clause in his vested clause in his contract that if he pitches over 140 innings, that becomes an option and it's $19 million a year. Under 140 innings, it becomes the club option at $14 million a year. So keep an eye on that. Like maybe you see spot starts from him. So you say Whitlock out of the bullpen and then maybe Giolito and Crawford rotating
one
in that
of those
last
guys
spot.
Would be the fifth guy, yeah.
Yeah,
I think Buehler is going to be your third or fourth guy. Like, I think it's going to go Crochet, Hauk, probably Bayo, and then Buehler. Because look, Buehler's won the two World Series. I think he can be a leader. He's been great in the playoffs, including this past year. But we're talking about a 5.38 ERA during the regular season last year. Like, he hasn't pitched a full season of or had a full season of strong play in a while.
But don't you put him at least towards the top of your rotation, maybe at least at two if you're doing a look-see with the guy, right? If
maybe,
you're giving him 21
yeah, I just think I
one
you don't,
year,
you don't I have give more faith
Bayo
in Hauk.
You don't give Bayo that pressure. You move him to three or four. You move him behind Buehler.
Like, I put Hauk at two, and then it's Buehler, Bayo, three, four, kind of whatever order you want.
Well, I think we saw with Bayo that he wasn't a two, right, last year. That's what we found out. Like, I don't think he could handle the pressure of a two, so he's a three. I just don't see how you have Buehler as a four if Bayo's a three and Hauk is a two, right? Like, I can almost see Hauk as the three and Bayo as the four. If you really want to kind of push the issue with Bayo, like, you really need to step up, show that you can get yourself past Hauk in this rotation, considering the stuff that Hauk had at the middle of the season. Like, I mean, the guy was probably the most untouchable guy in the league for a good 4 weeks there. So I just, obviously, Crochet is your one, but why wouldn't Buehler be your two if he's on a look-see? I don't know if I would want to be.
Buehler wasn't as good as Hauk last year, just straight up. I mean, Hauk was a better player. He's 28, too, so I know he doesn't have the playoff experience, but Bayo's 25. I could see wanting to hide him a little bit more. But
he's on a look-see. If you're getting who's on a look-see at the fourth spot, how much of a look are you really getting?
He's going to get 30 starts at the fourth spot. 28-30 starts.
That's the thing. If you're all coming off of two TJs,
you're
something
also goes, yeah, John. You're missing the point that Buehler got stronger as the year went along. Hauk regressed.
Sure, but that was Hauk's first time throwing 200 innings or whatever it was. Like, he was
Look, if you tell me like that Hauk and Bello are competing for that third spot, I could totally see that. It would just be the conversation is like, wow, Bello was at one point the two last year. Now he's the four. You would say, okay, this is your chance to really get your stuff together. But if Buehler's on this look-see, like as I mentioned, you want to look-see. You want to see what you get out of him because you don't want to determine like, okay, once we get to his final start of the season after going through the rotation, you probably want to be able to see some stuff up front, especially when you've got games where – It's a strong three-game series. You want to see if this Crochet-Buehler thing is really the future of this team. Hauk, you can see if there's an improvement and there's that room for growth and there's the pressure on Bayo to make sure that you can keep yourself in the top four when you've been projected to one day be the one. I think Bayo is the situation in this whole equation of if you see, I don't want to say a regression, but if you don't see improvement on the player, then are we really looking at a guy who might just be a three or a four?
And this is a guy they, let's not forget, invested an early extension in Brian. There were two guys, Brian Bello and Sedan Rafaela, that they invested those early extensions in. And it's funny because if you look at Bello last year, I mean, in April he had a 2.91 ERA, and then in May and June it was like over seven combined ERA. It was crazy, and then he got better towards the end of the year. He was good in August.
It's called late winter, early spring.
And he was good in August, and it was very similar to Tanner Houck, where the first 2 months of the year he was a Cy Young candidate. And then in July, or I think it was June, July, in August, he fell off a little bit, rebounded in September. Like, I'm banking on one of those guys should be able to give you a full season of good production. I think it's going to be Houck, could be Bayo, but you had two guys that had never thrown a ton of innings, both do it last year. You figure one of them should be able to build off that.
It'd be interesting. So looking at what worst case and best case scenario could be. So here's a best case scenario I see involving Crochet and Buehler. They're great going into September, and the Sox are so confident in them that they make the move to extend them both. And Giolito bounces back and goes over 140 innings. So if Giolito comes back and shows him to be solid, and then Crochet and Buehler are like, hey, look, if you feel like you could commit now, obviously with Buehler, you're going to have to make that decision sooner than later. But if you see that you like what you've gotten back from Crochet, I don't know if I'm the Red Sox and try and play around with my food and say, oh, well, we got a whole nother year to get to this. And then the player turn around and say, yeah, this was cool. Thanks for giving me the second win, but I'm out of here. So I would probably say if Buehler and Crochet look great into September, this team is the surprise of the league. Get them extended right away.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of faith in Giolito, especially because not only is it the surgery last year coming back, he was one of the worst pitchers in baseball after he got traded to the Angels at the end of 2023. So I look at Crochet as best case scenario, he's your ace. I think Hauk is a legit two. Buehler's like a 2-3 borderline guy, depending on the day. Bayo is a 3-4 borderline guy. And then you feel really good about going into the ALDS and having that group of guys pitch your first three games and go from there.
The bad scenario, Buehler thrives and doesn't want to talk extension, and a bidding war ensues after his look-see year.
Yeah, I think to me, it's Crochet does the Chris Sale, where it's his first time throwing a lot of innings. Mm-hmm. He's dominant the first 3 months, and then he falls off the last two. That was Chris Sale's MO even before he came to the Red Sox, and obviously we saw that continue once he was in Boston.
What about the worst? Buehler is nothing like what we saw in the World Series.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's called after the war. That's after
right?
bad.
Or right? if Hauck and Bayo don't improve, like if they're just what they were last year is just what they are. If neither one of them improves.
Yeah, so for bad, I also have Crochet fizzles down the stretch. That's the concern. And Giolito going over 140 innings, but they haven't been quality. So he's eating up innings, but they haven't been quality.
Yeah,
so
that high leverage.
Right, exactly. So now we get to the worst case scenario. You quit over lunch eaters. Well, that was on Braverman that time. That was not on you, John, because Braverman went straight to the worst.
So you know what? I'll start with my worst case scenario there, and that's Crochet does the Chris Sale, right? 146 innings last year. Once he gets to 175 this year, he breaks down. And then you have Hauk and Bayo, who look like the guys from last year that have a great month or two and then aren't really that good the rest of the year, inconsistent. You have Giolito, who looks like that worst pitcher in baseball on the Angels a couple of years ago. And then you're like, oh, crap, we really miss Corbin Burns and not getting him or a guy like that. And look, it's the Red Sox rotation has a lot to feel good about, but they also have a lot of things that still need to be proven, and that's why we're talking about this.
Yeah, my worst-case scenario was one sentence. Crochet arms issues pop up this year.
It's a very because nice then that sentence. Means,
right, right. Huh?
Good job on that sentence. Good work.
Okay, I was going to say, did I...
Just hyping
I
you up? No, I'm hyping you up.
Oh, no, I'm just thinking, did I write that sentence wrong? Crochet arms issues pop up this year. That's not a like an English class sentence, but it's a conversation sentence. I think that's the worst case scenario, because then you would be looking at the Red Sox and saying, okay, when are you going to stop going and get the rehab situation? Because, I mean, how many times do people get excited about getting two pitchers, one who's had one TJ surgery, which isn't unusual, and then getting another one that's had two TJ surgeries. Yeah,
not one,
and
these not are your, two, not three.
Right, exactly. You know, so that's what's kind of interesting of where we are as the fan base. It's like we're really excited about now rehab pitchers that one clearly at the top of rotation.
To build on that, like, where does Patrick Sandoval fit in this? Where does Quinn Priester and Richard Fitz fit in? Like, and I'm not really banking on
Giolito wet the bed before the season even started last year.
Yeah, like, I could see Sandoval coming back in the second half and being a pretty good pitcher. I could also see him not pitching at all for the Red Sox this year.
See,
like, kind of like, remember James Paxton a couple of years ago? Like, they signed him to a two-year deal, and the whole first year he just rehabbed, and the second year he was pretty good. Like, I could see something like that with Sandoval.
But you also feel like, why is the team, like, okay, if you don't get freed, why are you not after, say, Jack Flaherty, who also had, I think he had TJ.
Yeah, Flaherty's a weird one, too, because he's kind of sitting out there. And obviously the big name that we've been talking about and wanting them to overpay for is Burns or Max Fried and them. Flaherty's a pretty damn good pitcher, and he's still in his 20s.
Right, you could have given him years, right? I think that's the other part of it is the Red Sox are not committed to Crochet and Buehler 2 years from now, right? Like, 2 years from now. Yeah. Both of these guys could be gone. If they are, you would say these guys didn't perform or injuries reappeared. But my concern, and it's a good concern to have in season, but it'd be strange as the season finishes out, is let's say Walker Buehler continues to be lights out, but now he clearly knows that he's much worth more than that 21.1 he's getting. And the Red Sox were kind of hoping to kind of be like, it's an okay year and we can work with you and maybe your demand on the market won't be as great. But now the Red Sox have to see that one of their better pitchers from last year, they've got to get into a bidding war just because they were willing to do the look-see with him. It's one thing with a bat, right? It's one thing with the Tyler O'Neill and see how that worked. Who's the other guy they gave the one-year look-see and then it didn't really turn out the year before
was
that?
Was Duvall, right?
Yeah, Duvall, Adam Duvall, where that didn't necessarily work out as well, so you didn't get burned. But you don't. But at the same time, if you're the Red Sox, you don't feel like, oh my gosh, we're in super trouble now because Tyler O'Neill's not here next year. You still feel that way. But with the arms, you would say, gosh, man, if you get burned where the guy is good and then walks to the market, like, you're back at square one at a higher price.
Yeah, and that's why, like, you brought up Flaherty. I just look at this pitching staff, and I like the Buehler signing because, as I said earlier, he's a champion, he's a vet, he knows how to prepare. But I would love there to be one more guy that we can really depend on for 28, 30-ish starts. And that would be, like, Flaherty would fit that bill perfectly. Obviously, we know Burns would, Fried would have. But I would love to see a guy, because that's the only thing, like, again, Hauken Bayo pitched a lot of innings last year. They were inconsistent. Crochet has elite stuff, but only 146 innings. So I would love one more guy. And again, Flaherty, I think he just turned 29 or something like that in October. So, I mean, that's a guy you could sign for 5 or 6 years to cheaper money than Fried or Burns, or maybe even cheaper money than Snell. And I think you'd get a really good pitcher, especially if Crochet is ends
like another
up being,
Nathan Eovaldi here.
Maybe even a little better. And like if Crochet is a legit ace and Flaherty's a legit too, like you're in great shape.
KJ and Lyons in for Jones and Keefe. We wrap up the show next here on WEEI. Happy holidays.
Football is like a, I hate to say it, a dying sport. I think baseball will be surpassed by WNBA in 20 years. Baseball ain't even being played by Americans anymore.
KJ and Lyons in for Jones and Keefe before we make way for Dan Ball, Tom Carroll, and Joe Weil. That is Cam Newton, and you can't unmistakably mistake in Cam Newton's voice, saying that the WNBA will be a bigger sport in America than baseball will in 20 years. Here's where he, well, clearly I think he's absolutely wrong, but here's where I think he's getting to, and this is part of the fool's goal, right? Is you've been seeing these elevated numbers for different WNBA games, right? But you probably realize that more people are watching those games in one game at home than probably the total attendance for the entire season at the stadiums. Where with baseball, you're getting at least, what, 81 games in 30, 40,000 seat stadiums and all the commerce that goes on around it. Like, you really
and the
can't
World Series just had like its highest ratings of the last 5 or 6 years or whatever.
Right. If there's one sport, and this is just from, you know, watching all these different things over the years, and as John was talking about the podcast that I did inside the industry, like an industry podcast, not like somebody who wanted me on their podcast, but this is like, you know, industry deciders inside of the radio industry. You study ratings and stuff like that for years. And if there is a sport that WNBA is kind of like, ooh, watch out for what they're doing, and they're on at the same time, is the NHL. Like the NHL, yeah. and WNBA and even college games, even when Caitlin Clark was playing at Iowa, they were showing some numbers to be up there above some of the featured NHL games. And that's when I've kind of waxed poetic here. Like, the NHL needs to realize that A, the Canadian numbers don't count, and that's where the sport is absolutely huge. And B, anytime you can put one of the original six playing against each other, like, try and always make sure they're good. Please don't let the Rangers drop. Do something about what's happening in Chicago. Detroit's a fire right now. So the NHL has a original six consistently good issue. And then you get into areas where you're like, gosh, the only where you would find ice is in someone's refrigerator.
Well, I think the NHL,
market,
because of the nature of it, is so much more of a regional sport. Like, even
right.
The last 2 years, the best team in the NHL has been the Florida Panthers. They went to two cups. They won one. How many people in Florida really care about the Panthers? And even go
I'm
5 years
right
ago,
after the game and grab my stick.
Yeah, the Tampa Bay Lightning made three cups in a row, and they won two of them. How many people outside of their core fan base in Tampa really care about the Tampa Bay Lightning? Whereas when the Bruins won their cup in 2011, there was a million people at the parade. So I think that's part of it too, is the NHL is such a regional sport, and women's basketball has, I think, in Caitlin Clark, their biggest star in the history of their sport, right, playing right now. Like, that's like, and it's not exactly the same thing, but when Michael Jordan was playing in the 90s, people would stop what they were doing to watch the Bulls. Now, it's not to that
Tiger
level.
Tiger Woods as well with golf.
Right, and it's not to that level, but for women's basketball, it's the closest thing they've had to that, where people, I mean, think about when Caitlin Clark was at Iowa in the women's Final Four, outdrew the men. That's never happened before.
No, there were some regular season games that were outdrawing NHL games.
Yeah.
I forgot. I think it was one game. It was Iowa versus Nebraska. For like I was like, why Iowa, Nebraska, and clearly Caitlin Clark? But then we were like, okay, and it's on. And the other part of it was they were pulling that number on cable when the NHL game was on ABC.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure at that time she was breaking the all-time scoring record.
Yeah, there was that aspect to it as well.
Right. So that's where the danger is, when you start seeing a sport on cable outdoing another sport on the network numbers, because with cable you've got 8,000 different choices, but on network television you're making a dedicated commitment to go to that channel. I know, like, your free TV is on there as well, but think about the person who lives in the most remote of areas who doesn't have high fiber. So they're going to want to be able to see that game on free television. All right, before we get out of here, a couple text messages, 617-779-7937. What do you have, Joe?
Just getting back to the Red Sox, that kind of stuff. Just taking a look here. Oh, 781, you guys are talking about the starting rotation. 781 says, Hauk is way better than Buehler, and it's not even close.
Yeah, he was all of last year, and he's healthier. Yeah.
But, you know, I guess that's what we'll find out once we get to spring training, right? Because if you're giving a guy a one-year deal, look-see, it might be great. They were great last year, but you can make an argument that Hauk and Crochet were just as good last year, but clearly Crochet is the better pitcher, right?
Yeah, Crochet has the better stuff. I mean, he just threw fewer innings, but that was on purpose, too. They didn't want him to throw a lot of innings for the worst team.
Right, but in terms of what they did last year, right? Because
Crochet was better last year, but he threw fewer innings, so it's a little skewed, I guess.
Well, Hauk was incredible for those
first 2 months of the year. Hauk was unreal.
Right, so in terms of everything that they did last year, you felt like you got more out of Hauk than the White Sox got out of Crochet. despite as bad as the White Sox were.
Sure, I would probably give you that, because, I mean, the White Sox main motivation with Crochet was to just up his trade value, and they did that, but yeah.
Yeah, they started doing it as they started throttling him down. There's one of his starts last year where I don't even think
didn't he have like four innings?
He pitched the three batters and they removed him from the game, so he enters as the starter. It was like, here's your start, now get out after three games so that way we can make sure your arm doesn't fall apart right here on site. All right, John and I are back again Monday.
Sunday,
actually, that's right. We're here Sunday. We'll be talking a little bit after the game for the Patriots, and then we'll be here for Patriots Monday as well. Also, this is just that we've just discovered that there's reports that Bill Belichick will not be at the Wasabi Fenway Bowl. That's according to Rob Bradford. I don't know if that's a scoop.
Well, Bradford, I think, was going down to Media Day this afternoon, so he probably heard it from someone.
So what if Belichick is not there for Media Day, but maybe he's there for the game?
Wouldn't shock me, KJ. Would not.
I can't see if you're the ownership of this new program and you're not going to be there. Maybe in a abstract capacity, but I still think Belichick is going to be there, just without words. All right, Cooper Wilde, Dan Ball, and Joe Wilde.
Not Cooper Wilde.
I just created a baby. Joe Wilde, Tom Carroll, and Dan Ball are next here on WEEI. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, guys. That was fun.